Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Marvel Vision, a podcast about Marvel, the MCU, and right now, Falcon of the Winter Soldier. I am Alex.
I'm Justin.
I am Pete.
And we are talking about the penultimate episode of Falcon and the Winter Soldier, titled Truth. Truth. And we are not going to lie all episode long. Just kidding. That was my first lie.
Oh, man. We are liars. Straight up. Two truths and a lie.
This is a big episode. I know, in particular, I think I've been pretty down on the show, and I still certainly have my quibbles. Yeah, we've discussed this every week,
yes,
Pete.
No, but I didn't think overall you thought the show was down. I think you've been enjoying yourself.
I'm having an all right time watching it, but I think it's a little all over the place in terms of how things are happening. Let me finish what I'm saying. This episode was the best episode so far. That's my point. That's what I was getting towards.
And let me say, it's like, I know this is a tired way of talking about it, it's like a movie. It's the series is structured like a movie, and it's coming to the part where it's like, everyone's together, it's time to fight, and we're there, and it's good. My quibbles are, I'm fine with that sort of progression of the narrative, and it just means some episodes are going to be like a bit of a bummer. One thing I think is struggling here, the music montages.
Oh, you watch your mouth. That was hilarious. That was hilarious. A making of a boat music montage. Come on, that was fun.
I like the montage. The music is weird. There's something weird about the music. The montages are great in this show.
Okay, yeah.
The music,
I thought that was hilarious.
You didn't like Cotton Eye Joe? They used Cotton Eye Joe when they were building the boat. The entire time.
It felt like a late 80s movie.
Where
did you go? Where did you go from Cotton Eye Joe?
Why
finish the song.
Why would you put that in somebody's head?
We have a rule on this podcast that when you start Cotton Eye Joe, you have to do it to completion.
That is the worst, most like earworm of a song that won't leave your head. I hate that song. Anyways, emotional up. I got very choked up. I thought this was really touching. I love, you get a little bit of everything here. You get some action, you get some motion. Love the kind of like dual cliffhanger we got. That was great.
And I should have mentioned this earlier, but spoiler warning, obviously, go watch the episode because we are, of course, other than this section right here at the top, diving right into it. Now, brief overview of the plot. We get the end of the big fight from the last episode. John Walker has just killed Nico, one of the Flag Smashers. Bucky and Sam go after him. They break his arm, take away the shield. They head to Louisiana, as you do.
Yeah.
But first, Sam makes a brief stop with Isaiah Bradley, talks to him about the Super Soldier program, which is where the title of the episode comes from Truth, Red, White, and Black by Robert Morales and Kyle Baker, which we talked about here on the podcast before. And we get a little bit of a touch of that from the comic book here in the show. But then they end up rebuilding the boat along with the entire community. Sam starts to realize maybe he does want the shield. Maybe he does want to be Captain America after all. Bucky is wrestling with his own things, including Baron Zemo, who gets arrested by the Dora Milaje and taken to the raft. So we'll never see him again.
Gone.
He's done for. Gone
Ghosted.
Forever.
Yep.
Until they need some information about Hydra.
You always tell characters leaving for good when they do a very gigantic, slow shot revealing them in front of a Sokovian statue. Like, that guy's meaningless.
Yeah, no import at all. John Walker gets dishonorably discharged, but gets a new job offer from none other than Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
JLD coming in hot
like a boss.
We'll definitely talk about that in a minute. And at the end of the episode, John Walker is rebuilding a shield. Definitely his scrap metal shield is going to hold up against everything else, I'm very sure. And the Flag Smashers have recruited Batroc, thanks to Sharon Carter, maybe.
Yes.
To take down the GRC, who was having a meeting in New York City, right near Bryant Park, it seems like, which is a very nice park that everybody
very
should
nice area. I mean, if you're in the area, you should swing by. You know? Mm-hmm.
It's great. There's a great pret-a-manger right there.
Oh, wow. Look at you.
And the sandwiches are ready to eat.
Yes, that's my favorite restaurant, so thank you for bringing it up. So that's the broad overview. There's obviously a lot more to talk about, but the things that I liked about this episode, I was suckered in right at the beginning. I thought the action sequence, Sam and Bucky versus John Walker, I'm very surprised it was happening in the second to last episode so soon, relatively speaking, because that seemed like the big thing they were building to. But it was very nicely reminiscent of the Iron Man Bucky Cap fight from Civil War. It was intense. It was very, not very funny to me is the wrong word, but it was funny to me that one time John Walker decapitated a guy with a shield, and now that is his go-to finishing move.
That's his finishing move.
He tries to do it like 9 times. They barely get away.
But it's terrifying at the same time. What'd you guys think about this opening scene?
I thought it was a great fight, like really knocking out Bucky's arm, I thought was really cool and really visually well done.
Also, the you guys don't want to do this, and Bucky going, yeah, we do. That was just so great. And I liked it. It was kind of like their finishing move was finally working together. Although I was surprised that Falcon led with his legs instead of the shield. But whatever, you know, he's getting used to it. So it's understandable.
And it was a really good superhero fight, I feel like. Yeah. We've gotten a lot of, like, good action sequences, but this was just a great superhero, like, movie-level fight. And then we're really getting into the Shield gets a lot of camera time this episode. Mm-hmm. Especially
it's really the Shield is, like, another character.
Yeah, I mean, Bucky says it's part of his family.
He does.
So, yeah, it's going to get some time.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Shield, finish your dinner. It's almost bedtime.
I mean, I'll tell you, I know a lot of people were very affected by the last image of the last episode with John Walker standing with a bloody shield, which I thought was a very nice image. I wasn't emotionally affected.
Very nice image?
You always have a problem with the word nice.
It's a well done.
Well done. Well done. Medium rare. It was a medium rare.
It's a rare, well done issue.
You were like, I really like this. This is really spoken.
I did. My favorite character is John Walker, and he's the first time I've seen myself on TV. No,
I can't believe you. You know, of anyone I know, you are the most John Walker.
Absolutely. Wow. I mean, look at this chiseled jawline.
I've seen you decapitate so many tweets.
but what I was going to say is I was emotionally affected by the Shield in this episode. I think they did a really good job. Sam seeing the blood on there and just kind of trying to
wipe it off.
I love that. That's really good. Lovely. Good metaphor. Good visual metaphor. Like he can't. The Shield is scarred now, and he can't put it back. He can't wipe it off. He just has to move forward. And I think that sort of speaks to the larger episode. I think the Captain America is marred by John Walker, by what they did to Isaiah Bradley. All of that is not the pristine thing that he thought he was getting, that he gave up and put behind a glass case. And now in this episode, we see him take it back and get to the point where he opens a case and looks at some clothes.
Mm-hmm. But also, like, the fact that, like, you know, the fake Captain America was yelling, like, I am Captain America. Like, and like the actor did such a good job where it was like, it felt like he was trying to convince himself as well. You know what I mean? Like, not only to the other people, which was, I thought, well done to see.
He's great. And I do honestly mean he's great. Wyatt Russell, the actor, he's doing such a good job on the show to the point where you realize it's wrong when you're feeling it, but you feel for John Walker when you're watching this episode. He's obviously the bad guy. He's obviously the villain, but I know, Pete, you feel differently because your world is very black and white. Yeah. I live in shades of gray, though. You can see it from the clothes that I'm wearing.
50 shades
right
of
now.
Gray.
Yes, I live in 50 shades of gray.
But let me say, I agree with you, Alex. In the scene where he appears in front of the Senate panel, I thought it was done really well. When he first gets there, you're like, this guy's a bad guy. Fuck this guy. Yeah. But then he really does make the case. And over the course of it, he passes judgment on the senators. And I think he successfully flips it where you're like, actually, they're dicks, too. Like, both sides are wrong here. And I think that, again, we've talked about that a lot, the gray areas. This episode does a great job of muddying everything to the point where we're feeling different things about characters in the beginning and end of this episode.
Yeah, and I think, like, when you're making a point, if you can destroy a podium in the process, that really helps prove the point. So I'm glad that they used that kind of power move in this.
Did you want him to break the podium? Because I kind of wanted him to break the podium with his super strength.
Well, yeah, podium, exactly. Actually, the original Latin, it means smashbox.
Well, then he's really getting to the root of it.
Yeah. I did also really like, while we're talking about John Walker, the very clear, very stark contrast between what he is talking about and how he's talking about being Captain America versus Isaiah Bradley. Because, spoiler warning, we're all white here, but it's very clear that John Walker has severe white privilege, is saying, I deserve this, I need this. And that's the thing, that even if he's right to go up against the senators and say, you made me, you built me, there's still a level where he is 100% completely wrong at the same time. And he doesn't deserve that. He was doing his job. You know, it traumatized him. It hurt him. No, I'm saying up until then in the army. But he took it too far. And nobody deserves it. That's kind of the whole point of Captain America and the Erskine speech about the super soldier serum making you more of whoever you are versus what Isaiah Bradley is telling Sam, that no black man should ever be Captain America.
Yeah,
which was
not in this America, not in America that hasn't changed.
Exactly.
500 years.
I mean, I want to talk about, like, as soon as I saw him walking down the street with the case for the shield, which is great to see that it's still, you know, still got that sweet case. Yeah, it's a great case. just the way that Isaiah was like, don't you open that up. The Stars and Stripes mean nothing around here. And I was just like, oh, that is awesome. The back and forth was so great, so powerful, so moving. It was really, really well acted, well shot, performed. It was so fantastic.
That scene was great. I agree with you, Pete. But it's interesting. Later, Sarah's like, "Why you don't need to listen to Isaiah Bradley?" And Sam doesn't. How do you feel the fact that, like, what Isaiah was saying was like, "You can't be Captain America," and Sam eventually is like, "I can." And
I'm going to show you. Yeah,
but that makes, and I love the line that Sarah had, sort of being like, don't listen to him, he doesn't know. I thought, I was so surprised that they said that, but I was like, oh, it's, of course, it changes the point of view from like, this is right, this is wrong, to like, no, everyone has a different perspective. And I think that's a much more mature way to look at all the problems in America, especially race that is being grappled
with. Well, I think what we're going to get to in the next episode is where Sam got to in the comics, which is, no, he can't be Steve Rogers, Captain America. That is, like you were saying earlier, Justin, that's the shield in the glass case. And he can't be Isaiah Bradley, who is bitter and definitely, literally scarred by his experience, being very briefly Captain America. He's going to figure out his own way of doing it. He is a good guy. He wants to do right. He wants to do the right thing. And doing the right thing, even though it's hard, is the essence of Captain America, and is the essence of being a hero and being a superhero. And I think that's what he starts to realize at the end of the episode, and we'll probably have it literally said out loud at some point in the last episode.
But I also really like this thing of, like, you know, like something that it's still so relevant today. You know, Sam tries to talk about, like, this is a different time, this is different now, and he's saying, like, no, it's not. And there is so much truth in that. But what's nice is Sam is realizing, like, I can, you know, make my own path. I can kind of figure things out as me, not as me trying to be somebody. And I think that's why he says, like, it still doesn't feel right. You know, we get that one more time.
I know I'm repeating myself a little bit here, but again, I think that comes back to what Captain America is. You know, if you look at the iconic Captain America scenes from the MCU alone, him jumping on the grenade, even though that's going to kill him, him at the end of Avengers Endgame, before the portals open up, being like, all right, here's Thanos' army. Doesn't matter. I'm going to fight anyway. Yeah. And I think that's the thing. That's the essence that Sam is ultimately pulling
that,
there.
And he can do things all day.
Well, yeah, that he can do things all day. That Isaiah is right. Not much has changed. Things are worse in certain ways, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't keep fighting and trying all the same.
Right.
Yeah. Two things that I thought were sort of total gear change, funny and weird in this beginning bit. Torres coming in, Joaquin coming in, bringing like big stand up comedy energy after this like crazy fight. He's like, hey, yay, yay.
So let's talk about this. We talked about this offline a little bit between the two podcasts, but we were talking a little bit about how there's been rumored reshoots on the show. I heard a little bit more about that between the last time we taped the podcast and this time. And apparently, this is rumory because it's like very secondhand information, but apparently what happened was the original plot here was the Flag Smashers were going to release a virus that would kill off half the population of the Earth to bring it back to blip levels.
Wow.
For obvious reasons, they changed that. And a lot of it seems now, if you go back, if you watch the show, you can see that there are things like Mama Danya, who they keep talking about as this very important figure who died of, I don't know, question mark. She died of the virus in the original version. And that's why it was a big deal. It got released too quickly or something like that. And that's why also Sam and Bucky were going after them in the first place, rather than, oh, you guys are kind of like viral and maybe robbing a bank or something. Instead, they were going to kill half the population of the Earth. That's why they're a big threat. That's why everybody's after them. That's also why they were stealing vaccines in those early episodes, is to protect people against the virus. So I bring this up with Joaquin because apparently Joaquin was a late addition to the show, and it seems like a lot of his purpose is to come in there and kind of cover those reshoots and gaps.
Might I say he sort of yada yadas some information?
Ooh, these pretzel nuggets of information are making me thirsty.
So yeah, I don't want to say that would have been a better show. I do think it makes the Flag Smashers a totally different kind of threat, and sort of speaks more to a philosophy that is a hardcore, much more hardcore villainous, as opposed to being like, I wish people were able to move between borders, instead of like, I want to kill millions.
It also, on the other hand, though, I think explains a lot of the weird fluctuations in terms of what they're doing. Like this episode, we've seen about what, maybe 5-10 of them or something going around. They seem like the small, tight knit group, except for the first episode of the series and this episode where they reveal like, nope, we have operatives everywhere. We send out an alert in Bryant Park and literally everybody stands up. They walk away from the Shake Shack they're on their way.
Did you see how many goons like hang out in that park? Like that was like, I was like, man, the parks are full of just like crazy hitmen or like.
I've seen that happen with Pokemon Go, but never with the Flag Smashers app.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right.
The line, keep the wings, I thought was interesting. And Will, I feel like he's going to get the wings back and become his own version of Captain America next episode.
Wait, Falcon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Joaquin becomes Falcon when Sam becomes Captain America in the comics. So I think that was a nod to that.
Maybe. I don't know. You may be right. I just feel like
the suitcase didn't look like it had wings in there. It looked like it was just going to be a...
Yeah, no, I don't think the wings are in there. I think maybe eventually, when once we were talking about him identifying as his own version of Captain America, that feels like it may be a winged Captain America.
Ooh.
Because there was a wing. Falcon had wings.
Falcon has wings, but also Joaquin Falcon has wings. Maybe they just both have wings.
There you go. Red Bull gives you wings. And the only other thing is the end of the Walker scene where the senator, Walker's walking out and the senator's like, oh, and turn in the shield, turn in your laptop because you're fired, kid. You're done working at this place. I thought was just a funny, like, big middle management style.
Yeah, that was weird. Like, hey, and what happened to the shield?
Now, let's talk about this. This is why we're talking about John Walker again a little bit. We should talk about JLD coming
JLD.
In. JLD! Her character name is, and I'm going to read this off because I forget it. It's very long. Contessa Valentina Allegra de Fontaine.
Why does everybody keep doing that? She did that like twice. I was like, who cares? Just say Val.
That's the character's name in the comics. She was a classic S.H.I.E.L.D. character, I believe, created by Jim Steranko. She was a romantic interest sometime of Nick Fury. She was on S.H.I.E.L.D., worked with him. In more recent comics,
she was on Seinfeld.
She was on Seinfeld, and then she was on Veep.
Yeah.
And as a little bit of a side note, I don't know if you guys felt this way. I felt like they paced that out so people could meme that into the Veep meme, like the end of a Veep episode.
Yeah. The character to me had the pacing of Veep, but the energy of the lawyer she played on Arrested Development, like season two, where it's just like always talking and just being like, I don't know what I'm saying, I'm just talking.
It was great. Just like her energy from the jump of her walking in.
They let her improvise a lot of that dialogue.
Oh,
right?
I'm sure.
She's so good though. It's hard to tell.
Yeah. She was great. The other things about her character that I think are important to mention, in the comics more recently, she's been Madame Hydra, that character.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of speculation about, is she good? Is she bad? There is a little bit more information about the character, though, which is that she was originally supposed to be introduced in Black Widow, because Black Widow would have come out first before Falcon and the Winter Soldier, but obviously those have switched order, so we don't know whether she's going to show up there. I've also heard a couple of things about her that apparently she is going to try, whether they keep this or not, going to try to recruit Yelena, the new Black Widow, in Black Widow. So that's probably how she would have shown up. And it potentially was going to lead into the Thunderbolts. So her getting John Walker, U.S. agent, getting Baron Zemo probably at the Raft. 100%. And then Yelena, you've got half the team there already.
Have the team right there. I mean,
I feel like we're going to get a Spider-Man, was it 2, type reveal where it's like all the villains are in the prison cells and are like, hey, we should just be mad at everybody together.
Wait, are you talking about The Amazing Spider-Man 2?
Yes, yes.
Oh, okay. Great movie.
Yeah, great. Everyone's favorite. That's why I knew the title so quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I tell you, this is a total side note, but something I think about all the time with Amazing Spider-Man 2, which is such a weird specific thing, but the second trailer for Amazing Spider-Man 2, there's a line of dialogue where, was it Chris Cooper who plays Norman Osborn in those?
Yes.
Says, "We have plans for you, Parker." And then not only did they not continue that series, but also that line was cut out of the movie.
Oh, man.
Thought about that so much.
No plans.
Yeah, no plans.
We have no plans for you, Parker.
Yeah. Now, I did want to ask you guys a question.
It's almost scarier.
About the Isaiah Bradley scene, because I don't know if you guys remember, I assume you do, but when Truth came out, there was a huge flap about it. About having a black Captain America from comic book fans. I would argue probably racist comic book fans in particular.
Definitely
but
not,
I right? felt like the Isaiah Bradley scene here, just I got so tensed up while I was watching it because the dialogue and the tone of it reminded me so much of the conversation there, him talking about people never accepting a black Captain America, that I immediately flashed back to those conversations when the book originally came out. Did you guys have the same reaction there at all?
Maybe not as direct about the book, but like, yes, that was such a tense scene to watch. And I do remember the book. I was less into the controversy of it because I just was like, oh, this is a great book, and I love the questions that it's asking and the sort of position it's putting Isaiah's character at in the Captain America mythology.
Yeah, it also reminded me of like when Miles Morales happened and there was, again, an uprising of, you know, bullshit. So, yeah, I think, it's definitely well done and well addressed in this.
Yeah, I thought it was great. A couple of other things to call out. I've seen a couple of people mentioning this online, but I thought this was a really nice parallel. Isaiah tells the story about getting arrested because he went on a rescue mission behind enemy lines dressed as Cap. That's a little bit different than what happens in the comic book. But that parallels versus Captain America the First Avenger, where Steve Rogers does the exact same thing. He steals the costume, goes behind enemy lines, and he's made into a hero because of it.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a nice point.
But yeah, it's great.
Also, what did you guys think about Bucky flirting with Sarah? You shipping that?
That was really great. I really loved that, where he was like, "Hey, I'm Bucky." And it was just like this fun where she was like, "Hey." And then later Sam like, "No flirting with my sister." I very much enjoyed that. I thought it was very nice.
It was fun. We get a little bit of the brotherly play with all of that. And
yeah, the brother-sister back and forth, I completely agree, was really, really nice.
You're talking about the Bucky and Sam acting like
yes.
brothers, right?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, and just like getting after each other in a fun way. The scene later where they're like, we're coworkers, peers, friends, not really. Let's team up again, maybe.
Honestly, that was the sort of energy I wanted from the second episode of the show, you know, or even the first episode of the show. And Pete, don't get angry at me, but it's a little frustrating that we're finally getting it 5 episodes in. It feels like that's delayed. They could have started there and then have them break apart.
Why are you mad? We're there now, okay?
Because I think there's different ways of looking at this TV show, and there are parts that I really like, but at the same time, I think structurally, things are a little discombobulated. They're a little all over the place in terms of the arcs of the characters, and they're not measuring up. So I think we can look at it as a scene basis, as an episodic basis, but also as a season-long basis.
Yeah, well, here you go. Do you want to see Zemo dancing or no? If the answer is yes, then you got to wait a little bit before you get the partner action.
All right, the answer is no.
Well, you know what? There was a lot of moving parts in this. It was done in a way that was enjoyable enough where you shouldn't fucking complain about it. And it's
don't complain about things that I think could have been better on our podcast where we dissect episodes of this TV show. Is that what you're saying?
I'm having too much fun to hear you being like, it could have been better a little bit.
First of all, that's an amazing impersonation of you. That's exactly what I sound like. Second of all, no further points.
What did you guys think of the scene with Walker talking to Battlestar's parents?
That was rough, dude. That was tough. Because it was like, I'm glad he did it. That really showed a lot of, like, this guy isn't just a douchebag, you know what I mean? Like, it showed a lot of character on his part to do that. But then also, like, he was kind of standoffish and cold a little bit about it. And also fucking lied right to him. And it was part of me that felt like the sister knew, like, this guy is full of shit, but was just being nice around her parents, so.
It was interesting. I don't know why they included that scene. It felt like, is that what motivates Walker to feel like he is right? Because,
Well, I think so, yes. That's how I took it. Not that I've ever lied about anything, but I do think there are
said at the beginning of this podcast, we were liars and we'll lie often.
Well, but I think if you've lied, sometimes there's these lies that, like, you start doubling down on until they kind of become the truth in a certain way for you, tying back to the title of the episode. And I think that's what John Walker is doing there, that he knows he did the wrong thing. But like Pete was mentioning earlier, he keeps saying out loud, I'm Captain America. I did this. I did the right thing. I do the right things because I am Captain America. And to the point that he gets into the scene with Battlestar's parents, like you're saying, he's come off. This is after the hearing, right?
Yeah,
I think so. It's after the hearing. He's already yelled at the senators about that. He comes to tell the parents and he lies until he starts to believe it as his truth, that he did the right thing. He got the right guy. He has the right because he's always in the right.
And that was also kind of Lamar's mantra to him.
Yeah.
It was like, you deserve this because you're the guy who makes the right choices when, things are crazy. So, like, all of this is kind of reinstating this kind of thing for him. So,
yeah. So that's what I kind of took away from that. I mean, that ties into that mid-credit scene where he's making the shield. Clearly, he's making himself.
Did you think it was weird, though, when he was staring at that poster of himself? I thought he was going to turn the camera and be like, Cap is back!
Gosh, that would have been great.
Gonna sing a little song?
Yeah,
a musical number?
Skip down the street?
I mean, just to prognosticate a little bit, I think what he's going to do is he's going to come out, and his character going forward in the MCU is, I'm Captain America, and Julie Louis-Dreyfus is going to be like, you're a U.S. agent, shut up. You know, but he's clearly unhinged now. The Super Soul Serum has not reacted well with him, and he has lost control of his own narrative.
I think she's going to, Val is first going to be like, oh, you're like a close talker. Get away from me. And then say that.
This bit really is starting to show some shrinkage, I would say.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. A couple of other things before we start to wrap up here. We mentioned this earlier, but I really liked, actually, Zemo going to the Sokovia Memorial just from an MCU perspective. I thought he's right. They should be visiting Sokovia more often and helping them repair it. So that was very nice. Also,
like, it's just crazy how woke Zemo is, man. It just keeps getting reiterated. It's crazy.
You love him. He's the hero to you.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if he is, but it's he's got some points.
You've been brainwashed, man.
You just love everything.
We touched on this earlier, but Batroc is back and helping out the Flag Smashers and particularly gunning for Falcon at the end of the episode. And it looks like Sharon got him out of prison based on that conversation and is paying him. What's going on there? Is she the power broker like people have been suspecting, like we've been suspecting?
Yeah, it sort of feels that way. And also, is Batroc working for her and is like maybe going to flip on Carly and her squad?
Oh, maybe.
I don't know.
Why else would she do that?
I don't know. They definitely have a lot of explaining to do when it comes to her in the last episode in particular. Go ahead, Pete.
I was just going to say, I don't really know what a power broker is, but she is brokering a lot of deals with powerful people where there's going to be some real ramifications. So I feel like maybe she is.
I think you know almost exactly what a power broker is. You just said they're brokering deals between powerful people. Mm. Nailed it, dude.
Well, you know, I took a stab at it, you know.
Context, baby. I really liked the Bucky. We talked a little bit about this. The Bucky and Sam stuff that sort of like was bringing this episode to its last couple scenes. Bucky apologizing, talks about how he's questioning everything.
Man, and the line, beautiful.
The line that Sam has for him, you weren't amending, you were avenging, which I thought was cool. And it's like, now Bucky has to go deal with his shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the kind of pep talk that they give each other before they, you know, slowly walk away from each other was very cool, very touching. I thought it was just the right amount of bro-y. But I really want to talk about the fun two montages. I mean, not only do you get a training montage, which everybody loves, but then you get a boat montage? I mean, come on.
I could take or leave the boat montage, but this training montage was fucking awesome. I want a spin-off series that's just S.H.I.E.L.D. training montages. Not always Sam. Other characters can pop in and give it a spin, literally. Yeah. That was so well done, I thought. And, like, I played Ultimate Frisbee when I was in college. I know how hard it is to catch something like that. And it can really hurt your hands.
Oh, you can.
This was my one qualm, and I know they were never going to do this, but him catching that, there is no way Sam's fingers did not get sliced off when he was trying to catch that shield.
It doesn't have a sharp edge, Alex.
It's sharp enough to decapitate a man.
That was increasingly banged onto his
head. Yeah, exactly. Okay, sure. Yeah.
Fair. I don't know how the shield works. I don't get it. I've read comics my entire life, and I'm still like, I don't know.
Nobody knows. Spider-Man doesn't know.
It's great that they did that montage. We got to see it in action because it is very strange that Captain America's like, oh, how do I use this shield? I don't block bullets with it, really. I throw it and bounce it off 9 things, do backflips until it comes back to me, and then I catch it. It's like, wait, what? That's your idea of how to use this thing? To block stuff. Wait,
did you not play Ultimate Frisbee? Because that's how I played Ultimate Frisbee.
Sure. That is 100% Stan Lee in the office being like, we have to get this issue out. What does he do? I don't know. Throws the shield.
Yeah. And it comes back to him? Does he have more shields or does it bounce around and come back?
Mr. Lee, that's not how it works. Doesn't matter. I already printed the pages.
I'm selling plastic shields on the corner of Bryant Park.
I like this idea of instead of like, you know, a father and son playing catch, it was these two guys playing catch with the shield and, you know, kind of talked it out with their feelings and stuff.
Who's the father and who's the son, Pete?
Well, I think in different times in their life, they would be different things to each other. But it felt like Sam was getting some fatherly advice from Bucky. And then Bucky was also getting some fatherly advice.
So I would have flipped it. I feel like Sam had the dad.
One other thing that I thought was really fun. I loved the line when Bucky comes in and fixes the pipe. And Sam asks him, why did you use your metal arm?
Metal
and he says,
arm?
Oh, because I'm right-handed. I don't immediately think of it. Very funny. Honestly, like, one of the best jokes of the series so far, just because it was so understated. It was really well played.
Understated, and they put some time into it. Like, the pipe, I was like, what is this pipe bursting thing? I was like, what are we doing here? And it was just for that joke, and I worked
it. Great. Yeah. Good stuff. All right, before we wrap up here, let's talk about what is on our vision board for the final episode of Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Pete, what's on your vision board?
All right. Well, we've got a boat montage, right? So maybe we're going to get a truck montage. I don't know, maybe a plane montage. There's so many montage possibilities. Maybe putting on an outfit montage. Mm-hmm. I want the last episode to be mostly montages and then some very emotional stuff.
Mostly montages. The thing I'm looking forward to, we've talked about this a lot, how this series has done a great job of really blurring the lines between, like, what's right, what's wrong, who's right, who's wrong. And I'm very curious, when you're coming to an ending of something, you sort of have to choose, at least to some degree, like, who wins and who loses. Where does the story end? Or where does this chapter end, anyway? And so I'm curious how they're going to handle finding, putting all the characters in a position to really resolve this, and what we take away from, like this series, just on these other big ideas that are on the table.
Yeah, I think that's a good one in terms of nailing the themes, because that's the thing that's been kind of wobbly throughout. So as long as they can settle on something, I think it'll retroactively justify a lot of the other stuff. For me, this is an easy one that we're definitely going to see, but Sam in the new Cap costume. It's very cool in the comics. I'm excited to see how it is on screen. I'm excited to see it. I think it's what we've been waiting for. I'm glad. I was worried it was going to be like the last shot of the last episode, but it seems like we're going to get a full episode of it. I like that as a cliffhanger. It's exciting. I think it'll be fun.
And I really also want to see Bucky make amends. I really hope we get to see that. We saw the setup. I really want to pay
I hope he
that.
Kills that guy.
Oh, my God.
That's his way of making amends.
You are the worst, got it. Man.
Now you're with your son.
Yeah. You're the, oh, my God. You are the worst.
Amenders assemble is what I hope he says.
Oh, my God.
I'm sure we're going to have a lot more speculation after the next episode. There's going to be end credit scenes galore, things to talk about, whether it's Thunderbolts or Dark Avengers or whatever is coming out of this. Going to be very exciting. So please, all of you, head back here next week for more talk about Falcon and the Winter Soldier. In the meantime, if you'd like to support us, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out. We'd love to chat with you about Falcon and the Winter Soldier. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe and listen to the show. Marvel Vision Pod on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. ComicBookClubLive.com for this podcast and more. Until next time, don't lose all your marvels.
No matter how many times I did it, I never got the Frisbee to come back. You know?